This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Going to Harvard is the only way I'm going to get the love of my life back.
Harvard Law School?
But that's a top three school.
Oh, I have a 4.0.
Yes.
But your major is fashion merchandising. Harvard won't be impressed that you aced
history of polka dots.
What are your backups?
I don't need backups. I'm going to Harvard.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. And today, of course, it is Throwback Tuesday, and we're taking it back exactly 20 years almost to the day because Legally Blonde came out on July 13th, 2001, and we're looking back at the adventures of Elle Woods and Bruiser.
Yes, and this you can add to the list of movies that immediately makes me feel old when you say it's 20 years old. Because it was such an iconic film when it came out, and I was exactly at that age. I was just about to turn 20, and I think it hits that sweet spot because the character is at that age as well, starting out college, reimagining what your future can be and how you don't have to be what everyone thinks you are. It's just one of those films, and I was very curious to see how it would hold up 20 years later.
It's quite weird because it's really a 90s movie that somehow came out in 2001. Like, if you had to pin a year on this movie and you had no idea when it came out, you would say maybe like 95, 96 or 97, because it has all those qualities, right? It has like that weird Disney music in the background all the time. It has those like one note typecast characters. And it's a lot of fun. It's a very simple storyline, very fun movie. I hadn't seen it before this. I've never seen Legally Blonde. And I'm glad I did. But it's just that thing of, I honestly thought it was at least 30 years old.
So I found rewatching Legally Blonde such a fun and frothy experience. And it brought me right back to watching it for the first time 20 years ago. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure we'll get into it in terms of the aesthetics and the writing and all the rest of it, because it really is very much of that late 90s ilk, even the storyline is. So the storyline is essentially a very simple one. Elle Woods at the start is a sorority queen on the verge of getting everything she ever wanted, which is essentially a proposal from her boyfriend, who has the third in his name. So that tells you pretty much all you need to know. And essentially he breaks up with her because she's too blonde. She's too sort of lightweight to be his partner in life as he imagines it. He goes off to Harvard and she decides, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get into Harvard Law School and I'm going to hunt him down, essentially. And that's where it starts. But that's not really what the movie is about. And I think that that's where the true joy of it lies.
And Reese Witherspoon. I think the true joy of it really lies in Reese Witherspoon and her performance. Because watching it 20 years later, one of the things I realized is how a story just like this wouldn't necessarily fly today, right? Because there are all of these things that we talk about now about privilege and how particular kinds of women or physical attractiveness or just being rich and white in the States all mean a certain thing. So you couldn't make a Legally Blonde today and not have people interrogate the things that it's doing. But I think what elevates it beyond being problematic is Reese Witherspoon. There's just something so natural and real and sincere about her. You can believe that for all of her privileges, Elle is actually a really nice person. The movie shows you some of those things, but it's the performance. She just never comes across as someone that you could dislike.
True. And I was thinking about the same thing. Like, the movie is weirdly progressive for its time. And I say that, and I know 2001 isn't like a long, long time ago, like it's already in the 2000s. But for a movie like this, I expected a lot, like a lot worse. Not ahead of its time, but they were smart about their decisions and how they made certain characters do certain things and the motivations of other characters and how they sort of focus on rivalries and how they treat that without spoiling anything. So I was surprised. But again, it's not a complicated film. And I expected it to be like a lot more, like twists and turns. And it didn't do any of that. It is a very point A to point Z sort of story, which I appreciated a lot. It's like the best weekend watch for me.
So I think that there are what elevates it a little bit, aside from Reese Witherspoon, who we could spend this whole show talking about because she's so note perfect, right? All her little hair flips, all her little smiles are just so ideal. You watch her and you think, yeah, this is exactly, she is exactly who she is. And yet I also can't find it in me necessarily to just dismiss her, which I think is a very important thing. But the other thing is that it's little things, you know, the little throwaway lines, like happy people don't kill their husbands. You know, there are moments of real comedy brilliance in the script. And I think part of it is how it's delivered, but also it's in the writing. And the other thing is, when I rewatched it, the first thing that struck me is the scenes with her sorority and with her girlfriends. I actually think that even a movie made today would not be able to run away from wanting to create rivalries or wanting to create friendship tension because someone is deciding that they no longer want to be just a wife, for example. They would now like to study. They don't want to party anymore. They're going to sit in a quiet room and be tutored. You know, I think even movies made today would have a friend come in and sneer or make some sort of remark. But this movie is actually just full of supportive friendships, and actually supportive friendships between women, but also between men who or just people who believe in one another. And I love that. I like that the movie didn't try to generate unnecessary drama out of that. That felt quite loving and generous to me.
I think it's worth saying, and I only realized this time around because I paid attention to who the credits were. It's written by two women. It's directed by a man, Robert Luketic, but it's actually written by Karen McCullough-Lutz and Kirsten Smith. And they also wrote 10 Things I Hate About You, other films like Ella Enchanted. And, you know, the through line here is that they focus a lot on what female friendships really are like and what relationships between women can be without having to fall into that rivalry, fighting over a man, those kinds of tropes. And I think that's what makes this film feel less like a send-up of women and female relationships, but more like a comedy that flips these things on its head. And I really, really like that.
The movie is also like weirdly pieced together if you think about it, because like in the opening, maybe 15, 20 minutes, you kind of know where it's going. And I expected it to be like the whole thing to be about her getting into Harvard and graduating and, you know, just like achieving those goals and stuff. But then halfway through the film, and this is not a spoiler, but halfway through the film, it takes a strange turn and then it becomes like sort of courtroom legal drama. And I didn't expect that at all. That's like two movies in one. Like you would save the second half of the film for the sequel. You know, you wouldn't put both movies in a movie. But it's so well put together. It's weirdly pieced, but also well put together in the sense that for 90-ish minutes, it's barely 90 minutes long. It's a very tight film. And it's so well paced, and you don't feel the quickness of the runtime. You know, they tell the story so well.
You'd think that university part would be the whole film, right? Like there exactly, are movies yeah. that are all exactly just that.
I think it was well edited because there are moments within the film where you can tell that perhaps some characters are going to play a larger role. You know, because there is a whole sequence. There are small vignettes of Elle winning over her classmates. I think in another movie, it would probably have been an entire montage. Maybe we would mm-hmm. have had, you know, minutes spent with that. But in this case, it's more like someone goes from kind of disdaining her to maybe kind of clapping. But you never have a big heart-to-heart about, I know we're different, but we're both women, aren't we? You know, there's none of that. Which makes me think either that the script didn't have it, or that it was, in fact, something that was edited. And I think in this, we talk about this a lot. It's one of the big themes of our show, I think, along with practical effects, is the fact that movies sometimes, these days, Zack Snyder, run really, really long.
Hey, we're talking about Tomorrow War tomorrow, so same. Same problem.
Really, really excited. But I do think that there is something to be said about 90 minutes, this is my story, and at the end of it, you also realistically believe that this person grew that much. And there's a very specific pleasure to that, and to knowing that I can watch this and not be sleep deprived tomorrow.
I think the movie also knows what its punches are. It knows that it wants the university scene. It knows it wants the breakup scene. It knows it wants the courtroom scene. And then it kind of threads things in between that lead to those. And all of that goes back to the word you used right at the beginning, Lynn, frothy. That's not a bad thing. Frothy films are great fun to be in. And you don't want a 40-minute courtroom scene. You don't want breakups and then 1 hour of someone crying. In a frothy film, this is exactly the pace it should have.
Did anyone else expect the dog to do anything, though? Bruiser, right? That's the dog's name.
I forget this is your first watching, because every time you ask that, I'm like, but wait, I know what Bruiser does.
No, yeah. So like, I fully expected him to have like a part in the plot, because that's why you would show the dog that
like
many
showing
times,
up with
right?
evidence in his jaws.
Exactly. Yeah. So that kind of like big reveal. Oh, that's what the dog is there for. But it just ends up being a dog. It's a cute dog. It's a very cute dog, but it's just a dog. It doesn't do anything.
Bruiser's kind of almost a prop, isn't it, to kind of to tell you what kind of girl Elle is. I think also I just googled this because I was curious. Beverly Hills Chihuahua came out 7 years later, so I think that perhaps it was just a period of time where for some reason Chihuahuas were the dogs of cinema. I'm not sure. We're talking today about Legally Blonde, which came out almost to the day. We missed the anniversary by a couple of weeks, but it's 20 years old. It was directed, of course, by Robert Luketic. It was his feature length debut, which is kind of crazy to me. And it stars, of course, Reese Witherspoon, among others, but she really shone. Let us know if you've watched Legally Blonde, if you plan to rewatch it. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
Okay, I'm going to show you a little maneuver that my mother taught me in junior high. In my experience, it has a 98% success rate of getting a man's attention, and when used appropriately, it has an 83% rate of return on a dinner invitation.
Wow.
It's called the bend and snap. So you bend and snap. See? Bend and snap. Okay.
Like this?
Good snap. Come on.
Bend and snap.
Come on.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture and Throwback Tuesday with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. Today, we're taking it back to 2001's Legally Blonde. Before we get into the other stuff, I just wanted to say one of the great pleasures of rewatching films, aside from looking at it through a 20 years on lens, which we spoke about earlier, is also seeing everybody look so young. And this movie has that in spades, because you've got Reese Witherspoon, who's still kicking it. You've got Luke Wilson, you've got Selma Blair, you've got Victor Garber, you have Linda Cardellini showing up as Chutney. So it's a lot of people.
Well, firstly, Reese Witherspoon, I must say, just looks exactly the same. And we've seen her play versions of this role in so many things that you kind of forget that she wasn't always this perky blonde. I mean, before this, she was creepy perky blonde in Election, but she was also sort of the subdued girlfriend in Cruel Intentions. So I remember when Legally Blonde came out, this was actually a sort of a different role for her. It wasn't a given that this was a Reese Witherspoon role. And that's interesting, because when you see the journey post that, sure, she's done June Carter Cash and so on, but this is how most people think of Reese Witherspoon. And it's almost what she is like off screen as well. So for me, that notion of people being young also translates into just seeing people play characters. Luke Wilson doing this non-Wes Anderson role. There's such a sort of fun pleasure in that.
I thought they were not young enough. Like I was constantly distracted by how old they look for college kids. So I looked it up, and Luke Wilson was 29 when he did this. Reese Witherspoon was 25. She was the youngest. Selma Blair was 29. And I kind of felt it. It was like watching Tobey Maguire in the first Spider-Man, and you're not sure like how old he is. He looked like 35 years old. So this movie had the same effect. Like
but also, this was a very 90s, 2000 thing as well, casting much older people to play young people.
I could get past it because they're not in high school. Because the truth of the matter is Grease. All right? If we can all watch Grease and accept that these people are 16 or 18 years old, then I think everything else is sort of moot. I also think that it goes back to watching Reese Witherspoon attack the character of Elle Woods with like all her teeth and claws and just really sink into it, because she plays it with such panache and such joy and ease that the age thing, for me at least, kind of almost just went past it. I think I wanted to talk about to borrow Arvind's phrase, usually the pop culture footprint of Legally Blonde and why it is the size it is. Because yeah, there were sequels, which is not that big a deal, I think. There's been a musical, of course, but for some reason, things like the bend and snap, things like her video to apply to Harvard, her application video, her big courtroom speeches, these are things that are so firmly in, the pop culture iconography. And I'm not exactly sure why, except that they're so fun. And I really like them, but I'm not sure why they've lasted.
So I have a theory, and I was thinking about it, about how for the longest time, being feminine and being in love with pink and being made up and wearing high heels and dolled up, exactly like the film says, is associated with a particular kind of woman, and how if you were that kind of woman, you couldn't possibly also be smart and have ambitions and want to get ahead. And I think the movie both changed the conversation and also came out at a time when the conversation was changing and kind of set up what we see now, that you can embrace the heels and pinkness and nails and hair if you like. You can also read books and be a doctor or a lawyer or an astronaut. Those two things don't have to be mutually exclusive. And I think the reason things like Legally Blonde have had such a big cultural footprint is because it feeds into that conversation of women don't have to choose. And it actually redefines what women on screen have typically been portrayed as.
Talking about pop culture footprint, I wanted to ask about sequels. I had no idea this movie had sequels and like a sort of spin-off. Yeah, I saw the reviews and stuff. Legally Blonde 2 that came out 2 years later.
Red, and then White, and Blonde, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yikes. And then there's Legally Blondes, which was produced by Reese Witherspoon. And it's about her nieces or something that also go to Harvard or some university, which is, I don't know, all just weird plots. Weird plots.
Didn't like the second one. Can't remember it. Never watched Legally Blondes.
No, me neither. But there is going to be a third film, I think, from Mindy Kaling and Dan Gore. And that's traditionally been a good combination. I think if you think about a Brooklyn Nine-Nine sensibility being translated onto mm-hmm. Legally Blonde, I think that makes a fair amount of sense. I also, I think that part of the reason why it's become so enduring is for building off of what you said, Sharmila, about femininity and ambition. I think that it's also sort of an uncomplicated feel good, do good film, in that you have a character who in any other movie would be the mean girl. You know, she's blonde, she's the head of mm-hmm. her sorority, she's popular. And traditionally, that's been the mean girl. But in this movie, she's instead this really inclusive, very, very sweet person who, aside from having her own goals and ambitions, also wants to make sure that the people around her feel good, that the people around her understand her loyalties and things like that. And that's actually kind of rare. I know that we're talking about it as a light tropey film, and it definitely is all those things. But actually, Elle Woods is quite a singular character. You know, I'm not sure that there are that many sort of rom-com, teen-com characters who are like her.
So I immediately thought of Alicia Silverstone in Clueless, and that's another film that's celebrating its anniversary this year. And very similar, no? In that they play roles that are typically supposed to be the ones that are mean to everyone else, but actually they twist it and at the heart, they are nice people. They're nice people who want to see people around them treated well as well. In Legally Blonde, there's just one throwaway scene where someone says, oh, well, you probably called me, and then uses a slur for LGBT people. And just one response, Elle says, I don't use that word. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that it was very powerful to have a scene like that without belaboring it.
Yeah, the closest I can think of, I kept thinking about Anna Faris with that same Legally Blonde vibe, which goes back to just what kind of an actor Reese Witherspoon is. I love Anna Faris, but the range that Reese Witherspoon has is something else. Because I watched this over the weekend, what I did was I watched Legally Blonde first, and then the same night I put on Wild, just to see the comparison. And that is like some incredible work of like just an actor's actor, you know, like on one side you have this film from 2001. And then not long after, like barely 15 years, I think she does Wild. And that is like, you can't contend with that. That's like, there are very few people in that bracket. And Reese Witherspoon is one of the people who sort of owns that ballpark.
And I think it's also because she takes both characters as seriously.
Yes.
You know, whether or not she's playing Cheryl Strayed, or whether or not she's conducting anthropological, in her words, research on sorority girls, like sitting in Beverly Hills and listening to them talk. I think I just love the fact that she took the character really seriously. And I think in some ways it's been rewarded with this enduring legacy, oddly enough, of 20 years on, people still recognizing and vibing with that performance and with the film. So I think that, just in closing, Legally Blonde 3, are we keen? Are we not?
Not yet. Not until I see who else is involved.
Yeah, not yet. I think this was just it's a nice one-off movie that you can watch again and again if you want. It's very easy to go like drop in halfway through the film and still enjoy it as much. So no, I'm probably not even going to watch Legally Blonde 2.
I don't suggest it. I love watching Legally Blonde. I would re-watch it again and again, I think. For 3, I'm hoping that it's a streaming release. I think that, I rarely say this, but I think that it's ideal actually for a streaming release. Let us know. We're talking about Legally Blonde. Have you watched? Have you rewatched? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.